are listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome to episode 86 of the Geocaching Podcast. I am your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W. Four and
Monty Ryder.
If you want to participate on our show tonight, please call 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with our other listeners, and that can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. Click the Join Now to Participate button on the right. We also have a voicemail line, which can be found at 206-350-3GPS. And we're also on Twitter at twitter.com/GC Podcast. Welcome back, Montu and Daryl. Montu, how's your week been?
Absolutely crazy. Saturday morning was pretty good. We went to church. My daughter had two different numbers she had to perform. She sang for one number and played her flute for another. Then Saturday night, our Pathfinder Club marched in the Newport Richey City Christmas Parade. Nice 2-mile hike with that one. Sunday after that hike, Saturday night, was too tired to do anything, so I just sat around and vegetated. And then tonight, before the show, our Pathfinder Club had its annual Christmas party where they worked on some crafts, including painting some Pinewood Derby cars and even made a Christmas card for one of the local fire departments, as well as a large batch of cookies for the firefighters. So I hope they enjoy. Daryl?
Well, not a whole lot's been going on this end of the world, but I did get to pick up the DeLorean PN40 and actually go out for a first attempt with it on Sunday. Unfortunately, that was a DNF, but I'm not sure that it's because of the PN40. Both the iPhone and the PN40 were jumping all over the place, so we definitely had one of those bad satellite days. And we couldn't do the searching that we wanted to because everything was iced over. All of the down trees and stuff had like a 1/4-inch sheet of ice and just didn't really want to go through all of that. What were you doing this week, Andy?
Well, it was a blistery, cold, windy weekend, but we did, we actually hit an FTF. It was GC1JVMK, and we had a birthday party to go to. It was out that way. We saw it pop up Saturday night. Nothing happened on it, obviously. Sunday, nothing happened. So Sunday afternoon, we hit it. It was an FTF, and that's really about it. Just been playing with that, or playing with the PN40 and the new mixer that we have over here at this end of the podcast. So part of our technical trouble starting late was due to the new mixer, and part of it because it's winter and I had to get home, and it took me a while to get home. But I am here, so it's good to be starting the podcast. Montu, what's in our news tonight?
Well, we got a couple of great articles. First one in here is the MITAC, M-I-T-A-C, has plans to acquire the Magellan Consumer GPSRs. Magellan Navigation Incorporated announced Monday that they had entered into agreement to sell the Magellan Consumer Products Division to MITAC International Corporation. Closing of the transaction is anticipated in January of 2009. Financial terms are not disclosed, and MITAC is headquartered in Taiwan. It's the parent company of the MIO line of personal GPS receivers. Daryl?
Well, also, we have an article by Dan Murph at Engadget that reports that Ritz Camera will be soon selling the new nickel-zinc AA rechargeable batteries under the Quantary Super Z brand. The technology by PowerGenix offers higher voltages than traditional rechargeable batteries in line with one-time use options. And I actually took a look at the PowerGenix website. It looks like these are actually going to be higher voltage than your regular like alkaline batteries at 1.65 voltage. There's no pricing on the batteries yet, or the chargers, but look for those sometime after first of the year.
Well, the next thing in our news section as we are proud to announce the World GeoGathering event by the World GeoGathering staff. It's an event that's coming up July 16th through the 19th, 2009, and that is going to be basically starting a new event. It's going to include vending, a meet and greet, fun and games, a cacher ammo can painting, and much, much more, classes, seminars, and a live auction. And there will also be a cash race. And they said that there's going to be over 100 event-only on-site caches. So that'll be a lot of fun, a lot of new caches. So look for that. And we'll be posting a link to that in our show forums, or our show notes, which can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. And they do have a store and a swag store and stuff that they'll have on the GeoGathering site, but that won't open until March 15th. So looking forward to seeing people there. Mark that on your calendar. So tonight we have a few topics here. We've got Flagging Mountain Hikers had asked us a few questions in the online forum that we put out to as far as what we should cover. Had a few questions, so we thought we'd hit those. Daryl, why don't you kick us off with the first one?
All right. Well, the first question was why people hate, or I shouldn't say hate, but why people bash FTF hunters. Have they done something wrong to the individuals? Why does everyone talk about them with a snicker? And I'll kind of start off with my perception. A lot of it, I think, is simply envy. You know, these are the guys that seem to be able to get out and drop everything and go caching on a moment's notice. But I think some of that is also that many of the people who do the FTFs tend to let some of the basic rules and etiquette slide when they go hunting. So you know, you might not have someone rehide the cache as well if they're on an FTF hunt, or they might tear up the landscaping more than a traditional geocacher. So, there's obviously going to be a variety of things, but those are the two big things that I hear over and over again. Montu, do you hear anything about that?
Well, I do know strictly from when I've gotten the message that a cache has been published late in the evening, I'll see a log where one of the caches here in the area will go out very early in the morning. Now, in some cases, it's no big deal, but I do know on two occasions where the cache was located was inside of a park that says it's closed after dark. And from what the log said, they went in after dark and found the cache, which that I don't, I'm not going to chew him out, but, because it's not my place to, but I think going after a cache in a park that says specifically that it's closed after dark is not a good thing, because that's liable to give caching a bad name. And that's the one thing we get enough with the bomb scares and everything else. We don't need, we don't need to be adding to it by breaking the rules of a park or something like that, going in just because we are going to get a first to find on something.
Before I answer here, I want to let everyone know too that if you'd like to give us a call, our number is 724-444-7444, and our talkcast ID is 7525. Press the request to talk if you're in our chat room, or press *8 if you're just on the phone. We'd like to hear from you on any of these questions, and so give us a call and or type it in the chat room, and we'll try to catch that and to read that if you have any answers to this too. I would say for me, I think people bash FTF hunters a lot based on the fact that they're jealous of them, or they can't get out there as quick as us that can get out there. So we usually like to they don't like us because they're jealous of the fact that we get out there a little bit quicker than they do. So and also I'd say that they they don't like, they just probably, you know, it's a different aspect of the game. And that's like great thing about the game, though, with geocaching, is it can be something different to everybody. So I would say why people, for me, it's a game. And if you don't like FTF hunters, don't hunt, don't do an FTF. So that's it for that question. The next one is, what inspires you to put out a puzzle caches or hunt puzzle caches? And what is it about them that makes them fun? I would say for me, putting a puzzle cache, I put them out because I like creating challenging caches as far as the way to get. Well, I like putting out challenging caches to begin with, like the caches themselves. But sometimes you can't get to a challenging location. So a way to make them more challenging is to make a way that make a better way, you know, make it harder to get to the actual coordinates. So I would say that for me, that's the reason I put them out. I search them because I enjoy that thrill, that hunt that it takes to find mentally something, you know, get something mentally out of doing the puzzle. So it's like Flag Mountain Hikers said in our chat room, puzzles are a better way to hunt those micros. So they're more fun to hunt than micros. So that's why they do it. Daryl Monty, what do you guys think?
Well, I actually like it a lot for the, you know, extra mental workout. Some of them are a little bit too much where I don't actually enjoy doing them so much. But I really enjoy the creativity that I see out of so many of these puzzle caches, including things like, you know, visual puzzles that you might not think of. Montu?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. You know, the challenge of trying to figure it out, you know, where the cache is actually at is definitely an added bonus to it, if it's done right. And again, not, you know, just like with every other aspect of caching, not every puzzle cache is going to necessarily be for you. There's a wide assortment of different puzzles that are out there, so there's bound to be some puzzles that you're going to love, and there's going to be some puzzles that you're going to absolutely despise. Just skip that one and move on to the next one. Don't worry about it. Don't sweat the ones you can't figure out. Who knows, maybe one of these days you might come back to it and, oh, man, it was that easy? You know, you it just dawns on you and you realize how easy it really was. So, you know, don't sweat it. Just move on to the next one.
Well, another thing I like, too, is it does work very nicely for groups to get that team cooperation thing going so that you have more minds thinking about the same puzzle trying to solve and get the right solution.
Definitely.
Now, one thing I wanted to point out, this is going back to the first question, but I happened to catch in our chat room that I Am Frog 2002 said that the reason that they snicker there is because about FTF hunters is because the person who is finding most of their FTFing, most of their caches, lives 30 miles away. And so for them to FTF, they got to drive. He's insane, is what he says. You know, he's dedicated, very dedicated, and that's why they snicker when it comes to FTF hunts there. So
in that case, I'd have to say the guy earned it.
Yeah, I'd say too, man, if you're willing to get in the car at any time of the day and drive 30 miles just for a cache, I mean, you earn the FTF. I mean, I like FTF hunting if it's in my town. I mean, I'll even think about going out after dark and getting it, but if it's more than my town, and my town isn't very big, guys. I don't live in, you know, Detroit metro area like Daryl does. But if it's in my area, my town, I'll get it. But I'm not going to go for an FTF that's, you know, out of my way, either. So that's how I like hitting the new caches, but I'm not going to go out of my way to get the FTF.
Yeah. Now, next question we have for tonight is, do you look at topo maps? How important are they to your geocaching? What topo maps do you use and what don't you use? Now, I know with myself, yes, I do look at the topo maps. Now, in some areas, and especially here in Florida, it's not that big of a deal. We don't have the ravines like you do in some parts of the U.S., but sometimes you will have that little stream that doesn't show up on the GPS, but if you're looking at that topo map, you might see it there and realize, okay, I need to find where there's going to be a spot to cross this thing, or maybe I need to come at this from a different angle. So definitely using the topo maps comes in handy. As far as which ones I use, I use the ones that are right there on GSAC primarily, and with my expert GPS. So both of those, you've got access to some great topographical maps. So those are the ones that I use. I'm really not any that I shy away from, because I just get whatever I can get my hands on. Anybody else with any comments on that one?
Well, I am addicted to the maps, and I've just recently, this last summer, put the maps into my GPS. Just because this last year is when I got my map, the GPS 76 from Garmin, the 76 CSX. My previous one was the eTrek Legend, so you could put maps in it, but not very well. So mostly this past year, I did use the Topo Maps a little bit, but not really, because we are in a flat. Indiana's really, really flat. And I have to admit, I really don't know how to read the Topo Maps. I've done some searching on it on the internet and tried to figure out how to read the Topo Maps. And I get it a little bit, but in the field, is it practical? Not quite yet. So that's one of my goals this next summer, is to learn more about the Topo Maps and how to read them. So I, like I said, you know, being here in Flatland, Indiana, there's not a huge, huge amount of need for them. I would love to be in Arizona, places that I actually need to use a topo map, and, you know, be able to actually hike as opposed to doing a lot of the urban caches. But that's for me. That's what I use. Daryl, how about yourself?
Well, I'm a big fan of the topo maps on the GPS. I don't really use them online at all. If I'm going to do something online, I usually look at the satellite and the even just street maps, but it's the satellite maps that are most intriguing online. But on the GPS, I use pretty much only the topo maps, and that really was motivated by the problem of the street maps not having any kind of detail, no reference points, nothing, when I go into some of the bigger parks. So you'd be walking along, there's no points of reference, nothing. You're just staring at a blank white screen, you know, hoping for something to tell you where you're at. So with the topo maps, you have, if nothing else, the contour lines that, you know, will kind of give you a hint as to where you're going. Make sure that you don't have a huge ravine coming up or something like that that you have to work around. But most of the time, it's just things like the rivers being on the topo maps where they're not on the street maps. And if they are, I find that the topo, usually but not always, is actually more accurate than the street maps are for things like the rivers and trails and railroad tracks, that kind of thing.
Now, I wanted to comment, too. I noticed that Flag Mountain Hikers said that topo maps are very, very important in Arizona, for the forests and canyons. They use ones from GPSFileDepot.com, and they also said take a basic geology class on how to learn and read topo maps. That's how he learned. So those are the ones that they use. Anybody else have other maps that they use?
Well, I'll mention too that I also live in an area there's very little terrain change. And one of the things that I don't use are the 3D views on a lot of the new GPSs.
Yeah, I noticed when I'm playing with the Topo 7 that comes with the PN40, I really like the 3D view that they have. But again, I don't get a 3D view here in Indiana because it's all flat. But when you go out to places where it's not flat, it's really cool to see that view. Especially like when I would assume when planning your trip, obviously I've not, you know, been out to that area where you need that recently, you know, since I've got the Topo 7, but it is a cool feature. So I would agree, Daryl, that, you know, in places where like big parks where you don't know the terrain, it is definitely helpful more than looking at a stream or, you know, looking at a blank screen. So that's as far as topo maps. That's what I would say. Our next question is, what features of GC.com do you use on a regular basis? And have you learned something there that you have incorporated into your caching? Do you read the forums? Have you made friends through the forums and or geocaching.com? That's a really huge question to unpack. I'll go ahead and start by reading what features do I use from geocaching.com on a regular basis. I would say that the main thing that I use, and it's the premium member feature, but is the pocket queries. Those you can't live without them. If you're doing a lot of caching, you really can't. There's nothing that compares to. I wouldn't go back to being a non-member. You know, you really can't. You know, do that. Those pocket queries are the greatest. You know, I would say. I mean, I do like the bookmarks feature for some things. But as far as I think the main thing that I like about the most and use on a daily basis or weekly basis is the pocket queries and to update my databases and stuff like that. Daryl, Montu, how about yourself?
Go ahead, Daryl.
Okay. I also love the pocket queries, and quite honestly, I don't really go up to the GC site much anymore, aside from grabbing new pocket queries and actually logging the caches. Pocket queries are just unbelievable. If I had to go and download each web page again and print it off, there's no chance at all I would ever do any power caching, and probably not do much caching, period. So that's what enables me to get out and really go caching. And for trips, I love the caches along a route, and I can't imagine not having that anymore. But for my logging, it's the field notes. I use the Oregon now to make all my quick notes in the field, and then just use upload field notes and do all my logging that way. So that's been really, really nice and saves us a lot of time. Montu?
No, I think for me it's also got to be the pocket queries and also the fact that with the membership we're able to go paperless. As far as the forums, I really haven't tinkered around much there. It's mainly just been the added features that we've got out on the main cache pages, the member only caches that we're able to get to, and the fact that we are able to work everything paperless now if desired. Get all that listing on the computer rather than having to go online or print out a hard copy of everything. I still got one file cabinet drawer that's just loaded with cache pages that I had printed out and then laminated.
You could maybe recycle them. I don't know.
Actually, no. I do hang on to those because when I teach, some of the locations where I wind up teaching geocaching to the Pathfinder groups, we don't have internet access, so that helps for me to show them what a listing page looks like. I've got the hard copy there for them to take a look at.
Gotcha. Yeah, we also have been lots of different things in our chat room has been noted. One of the things is the notifications of the publishers, and that's great for us at FTF Hound, like we mentioned earlier, because that way we get, especially those of us who have or used to have BlackBerry, gets published right to your BlackBerry. As soon as the cache gets published, you can look at all the information and, you know, go for it right there. Watch lists, things like that are great. Member-only caches have been noted. What else has been noticed? The field notes has been noted as awesome, too, in our chat room. Well, the other part of the question is, have you learned something at GC.com that you have incorporated into your caching? Ooh, I'm going to pass on this one first. Daryl, want to anything how to answer that question?
Well, really, I haven't learned much from GC that I've incorporated in since, you know, the early, early days of caching when I was just getting going. You know, my best resources these days are the other podcasts. You know, you pick up so much from, you know, Podcacher, you know, Granite State Geocaching, all of these other podcasts out there, including the interviews on Cache Maniacs. We pick up new things quite frequently from those interviews. And it's really you know, a great resource to go pick up those new tips and tricks that have made some of our caching easier. Montu?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there, Daryl. With the, you know, even with the guests that the folks that we've got in our chat room right now, they're throwing suggestions at us left and right in the chat room as to different ideas. So we definitely, you know, our listening audience is definitely a great help, as well as the other podcasts that are out there. They're all combined, they make a fantastic resource, which I think I agree. I've learned more from our audience and from the different podcasts that are out there than what I've learned from GC.com. Also, you know, yeah, there's even the support sites like Caching University, where I picked up a few tidbits here and there as well. You know, it almost makes you sad when one of our fellow podcasts decides to retire. So, you know, I'm glad that we still have quite a few good quality podcasts that are still going, like ours, like Cachemaniacs, Caches the Roundtable, Podcacher, Granite State, Twin Cities, all of them. I'm glad that they're all out there. And believe me, if I didn't mention you, I listen to y'all. Every one that I've ever heard has always been a great podcast. So it all makes a great resource.
And even the Dutch one that I can't understand, but the promo of it makes me just want to dance. But
what, Geocache Radio?
Yes, correct.
The one that's in Dutch.
Yeah.
Well, now you have a reason to learn Dutch.
True. But for I guess I would say the same thing. Yeah, there's not a whole lot. GC.com is a little bit stale on resources. I mean, you can go to the forums, but I don't necessarily like going to the forums because there's people are so mean in there. So I don't necessarily like going to the forums. So for me, the forums isn't one of the things that I like to hang out. There are a few like good things in there, but for the most part, not so much. So yeah, it's for me again. It's the podcasts that I find a lot of good information on, and necessity too. I mean, like this summer, I had a necessity on figuring out how to manage all my waypoints and things like that. And so for me, what I did is I learned about custom POIs, and guess what? I brought it here to the podcast so other people could listen. So for me, yeah, it's the podcast, and out of necessity, I just learned things. On my own through websites, not necessarily even GC.com, but you know, out of necessity and from other podcasts, and that's one of the awesome things about podcasts is you have a niche and people fill it with podcasts and with information. So that's one of the things I like about podcasts and podcasting. So the next question I kind of already answered here is do you read the forums? And yes and no. I do every so often. I don't go too much just because, like I said, people get blasted in there and flamed and stuff that it's just ridiculous. You know, stuff that people wouldn't say in real life, they say in the chat or in the forum. So I tend not to go there. I do go to the podcaster forums though, and I like reading stuff in there, learning new stuff in there. But as far as the GC.com forum, not so much. How about you guys?
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree there. You know, I'll go into the podcaster forums. A lot of times, though, I'll even here in Florida, we do have our own geocaching association, and I think this is one of the better resources because it's more local oriented. You can get more specific information about your particular area by going to that area's geocaching association. The Florida Geocachers Association has been invaluable to me. There's a lot of information that's on there in the forums, and so far, I'm going to knock on wood, they have not gotten to the point where they're putting down people like what we do see from time to time on the GC forums. So that's one thing that I find invaluable is going with the local ones. Daryl?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat that I prefer the local ones. You know, the Groundspeak forums have a lot of information, and that's part of their problem because it's too hard to parse everything that's going through those forums and find that little bit of relevant information. So I quite honestly just don't even really use the GC forums anymore. I'll use a search feature to try to find one little tidbit, check out new features. You know, if I have a bug report, that kind of stuff, I put it in there. Otherwise, no, I really don't use the GC forums at all. You know, I have to rely on the local forums, the podcaster forums, which, again, I just really don't have time to go there. It's mostly the conversations at the local meet and greets and things like that that provide a lot of the information for me these days.
Well, and that kind of brings us to the next point, too, is have you made any friends through the forums at geocaching.com or through geocaching.com? I've made friends definitely through caching. There are a lot of caches around here that, well, Candy from our that's normally in our chat room live with us. I consider her a friend. I met her through caching, her and her husband, Dan. Lots of people that I met through caching. And then that's one of the things I like about it too, is just the people, for the most part, when you meet them, are really, really, really nice. You usually don't have problems with other cachers that you meet in person. So for me, yeah, I think that I've met a lot of people through caching, people that I wouldn't know otherwise. So I really do like meeting people, and hopefully get to meet some of our listeners when we do our geocaching podcast meetup here sometime in 2009.
Yeah, I have a number of friends that I've made through geocaching, and none of them through the forums, though. It's all been people that I've met through events, through the podcast. You know, Andy and Montu, you know, these are folks that I never would have met through geocaching. Probably wouldn't have made it to events with us either, but through the podcast we get together, and, you know, looking forward to caching with Montu. And Andy and I have done a little bit of caching, so
yeah,
you know, that's always fun.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you know, look at the three of us, you know. Two totally different geographical areas of the U.S., and you know, I definitely consider both of you very close friends, as well as a lot of our listeners. You know, a lot of them are now following both my Flickr and following me on Twitter. Although I'm sure I'm probably boring a few of them to death sometimes, but you know, it's definitely been a building. Building aid, because I've definitely made some friends through the podcast and out caching.
And Bella Candy in the chat room reminded us too that there are several people that they know of that through geocaching are dating. And you know, we've heard of several on the Podcaster podcast who, you know, have gotten engaged in.
Sunny and
caching. Well, and Sunny and Sandy. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
So many people out there that, you know, I'd probably say that most of my friends that I'm currently in touch with are geocachers that I didn't know beforehand. And a couple of weeks ago, I went geocaching with Geek Boy and Bill from Team Legend 4, and neither one of those people I knew before geocaching. And it's just, we spent an entire year, you know, running around in really cold weather and hunting for little boxes.
So, with that, that's all of the questions that we had from Fly Mountain Hikers. If anyone else has any questions, any just, you know, stuff they want to ask us, give us a call, 724-444-7444. Our TalkCast ID is 7525. Press the request to talk button if you're in our chat room. Or if you're just on the phone, press the *8 key. That'll get you in the queue to talk here. And, you know, if you're, you know, not listening live here and you're listening to this record later on, our voicemail number is 206-3503-GPS. And we like having, you know, we like hearing questions that you guys have, too. So, you know, just like this, give us a a call, leave us a voicemail of other questions you have for us, just even simple questions. We'll try to get them on and answer it in the podcast. Well, Montu, I think you want, before we close here, I think you wanted to have something else to put in.
Yeah, just a reminder for anybody that is heading south for the colder months, December 28, I've already mentioned this once before, we're having our third annual Starkey Park Geo event. This is located just north of Tampa here in the west coast of Florida. Anyone who wants to is welcome to attend. It's going to be starting at about 10 a.m. and running until the park kicks us out. The park is open from dawn to dusk, and we'd love to see you there. You know, especially any of our listeners here, I'd love to meet you. Please walk up and let us know that you heard this on the podcast. It's GC1G988. It's going to be a potluck lunch, and all are welcome.
All right. Thanks, Montu. I'd love to make it to it, but I'm probably not going to be migrating down there. Although, after the weather today and driving home, I might have to do that because it was extremely cold today trying to drive home from work and slushy and yuck. And also, I Am Frog says, too, that the GeoCoin Fest 2009 will be on 10/10/09, and the website and cash page are coming soon, so look out for those. I want to remind everybody, too, we're not going to be live next week because it's Christmas week. Be looking for us. We're going to be having a, let's just say like a little musical show. We'll have a little bit of Christmas music to put on and just some stuff from us podcasters here. So we be looking for that. That'll be out about Tuesday. So you can put it in your iPod and listen, you know, on your trips, Christmas trips and stuff like that. So I also want to remind everybody, too, that we are having Cash or Coffee, which we've done before. It's an open forum type of thing where we just move, let the mics open all night, and we talk whatever you would talk, just like you were having a meet and greet in a coffee shop. So we're going to be doing that on the last Tuesday of every month until, I think, February. So that's not this week, but it's the week after that. So join us for that. And fine, Flag Mountain Hikers, we'd have cash or tea if we want. You can bring your tea. You can drink whatever you want to our cash or coffee. So with that, join us every Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. We do this Eastern Time on the TalkShoe service. You can call us in live at 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Or you can visit our show notes, which have links to all of our past shows. And that can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. And you can call our voicemail line again at 206-350-3GPS anytime to leave us a message. And again, finally, from all of us at the Geocaching Podcast to all of your families, we wish you warm and happy holiday season. Have a good week and happy caching. Try and stay warm.